Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today, starting off the second half of 2016. We have a great guest on today, Dave Pasgan from 101 Mobility. But before we introduce Dave, I'd like to introduce my co-host, Stan Friedman.
I can't believe what you just said, Paul. We're beginning the second half of the year. Where is the time flying?
You know, on June 30th, we ended the second quarter, ended the second half. I mean, if everybody's not at least 50% of their goals, they need to be ramping up very, very quickly. And now is not the time of the year to make excuses. You know, summertime can be a very busy time for franchise professionals. And so they just have to make it happen. And if you have exceeded your goals in the first half of the year, hell, use the third quarter to blow out the goals for 2016 and start 2017. I can't believe I'm already talking about 2017, Stan.
Yeah, but I got a flash for you. If you don't start thinking that way, then 2017 will be halfway over before you realize it, and you'll be looking ahead to 18 and wondering what happened.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So coming back from a nice extended holiday weekend, saw a lot of great things online and social media that our franchise community had been involved in, who was at the beach, who was out on a boat, who was at a barbecue. I mean, it was really great stuff. What is going on in the world of franchising, Stan, if anything?
Well, I'll tell you what, Paul, I thought that I'd still need to recuperate a little bit from the 4th, and so I'm going to segue out of the 4th of July weekend, where there was just an abundance of eating and hate, too much of the wrong things, I might add, by doing a little bit of a food-centric front of the house, and not all of it franchise-related, but, you know, it's the dog days of summer, we got to give ourselves a break. I do have a couple of tidbits that are kind of franchise-relevant. But I've got more of a food theme to start with today, Paul. And as a sidebar to that, I don't know if you saw it or not live, but I was glued and riveted to the TV as my friends from Major League Eating were being featured on ESPN live from Coney Island as the Nathan's Hot Dog Championships were underway on the 4th of July. My good friend Joey the Jaws Chestnut reclaimed his world title, Paul. Just try to picture 70 hot dogs in 10 minutes.
No, I couldn't even imagine it. Even if they were Hebrew Nationals, I couldn't do it.
70 Nathan's hot dogs, Paul, in 10 minutes. Broke his own world record, which was previously 68. Can't wait to see Jaws in Buffalo, which, as we're sitting here talking about things that seem like they're out in the distance, Labor Day weekend is just a blink or two away. And Joey the Jaws will be in Buffalo along with the rest of Major League Eating's competitive eating team for the United States Competitive Wing Eating Championships, all part of the debauchery at the National Buffalo Wing Festival coming up on Labor Day weekend. I just point that out in passing.
Stan, I wanted to bring up a couple of facts of Joey Chestnut as I was texting my daughter Jennifer the other day about it. He's also the birthday cake champion, 14.5 pounds of birthday cake in 10 minutes. He's also eaten the most Peeps. Those are those little things that come around Easter time, 200 of them in 10 minutes. He also ate 14 pounds of burritos in 10 minutes, and get this, 12.8 pounds of fried asparagus in 10 minutes. This guy, it's no wonder he's closing in on $1 million worth of earnings just from competitive eating. Amazing.
And when you look at the guy, he just looks like anybody on the street. You know, he's not a big guy. And, I mean, Sonya the Black Widow Thomas, you know, she's 85 pounds soaking wet, and that girl put away 115, 120 wings, you know, in 10 or 12 minutes year over year. And then she goes out to dinner. I don't know how they do it, but they eat for a living, Paul, as opposed to guys like me and you that live to eat.
Yep.
Hey, so speaking of eating, it looks like the price of pork is way down this summer, and our favorite places like Chili's and Del Frisco's and other places in the franchise world that serve wings are going to be serving lots more of them and for a lot less because prices are down. So racks of ribs are in the future for the summer menus, speaking of things like the 4th of July and Labor Day. And also on the food side of business, I picked this up off of the Smart Brief, QSR Magazine's 7th annual 2016 Best Franchise Deals. In past years, QSR has rated for the past 6 years an annual look at the 10 to 12 quick service restaurant and fast casual concepts that provide franchisees the best ROI. This year, they've taken a bit of a turn, and they've partnered with our friend Eric Stites and Michelle Rowan at Franchise Business Review. And what they're reporting this year is the 2016 best franchise deals that are out in the marketplace. These include brands that are friends and newbies as well as old timers like Arby's, Checkers, and Rally's. My new friends at Fuzzy's Taco Shops out of Dallas, Fort Worth, McAllister's Deli, Penn Station, Pyology Pizza, Topper's Pizza, Tropical Smoothie Cafe, and rounding out the dominance of pizza on this chain list of chains, Your Pie. So those are the top 12, according to QSR and Franchise Business Review, both of whom are trusted in their space. I take them at their word, not knowing what the methodology was, but it's a compilation of those things that QSR and Franchise Business Review have come up with together, ranking these as the 12 best franchise deals in the quick serve or fast food space for 2016. And the last thing I'm going to leave you with, Paul, is something that we take for granted all too often, but it's something that everybody should think about because it's really the cornerstone of franchising, as we're going to talk a little bit about relationships and how important customer service is with Dave. I grabbed this on Smart Brief as well. And it's an article that was written by a gentleman named Naftali Hoff, and it's How to Foster Workplace Passion. And Naftali Hoff's article is worth a read. If you haven't looked at your Smart Brief yet this week, catch this when you do, and give it a read. And it opens with a great quote. And he opens this with a quote that says, "If a man is called to be a street sweeper, he should sweep streets, even as Michelangelo painted, or Beethoven composed music, or Shakespeare wrote poetry. He should sweep streets so well that all the hosts of heaven and earth will pause to say, here lived a great street sweeper who did his job well." That quote comes from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and it really is the cornerstone of the second most important thing that it takes to be successful in franchising, second to money, which we know you got to have money to make money, but you better have passion coming along with it. And this was a great read that I would love for everyone to just take a look at by Naftali Hoff, How to Foster Workplace Passion, and think about that as it extends to the world that we live in franchising. And Paul,
well, that's great. I almost expected you to do a mic drop after you finished that quote. I thought it would have been a perfect time.
Well, next time. But that's the front of the house for this week, Paul.
Well, talking about quotes, you know, there's an interesting one that I found from our guest, David Pazgan. "The customer experience is where one-on-one mobility has been able to stand apart, with our core values reflecting our commitment to providing a level of customer service that is unmatched in the industry. Our franchise owners live in the communities they serve. They care about the customer. They are passionate and are willing to go above and beyond for their customers." Dave, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thanks, guys, for having me on.
Well, thank you. You're the one that's probably the busiest out of the three of us, I would imagine, right now.
No
as
worries.
Fast as your brand is growing and so many things that have been going on in really a relatively short period of time. For those that don't know, one-on-one mobility, I believe that by the end of this show, you'll have a strong opinion out of where this brand has come from and where it is today, because it's really lighting it up. So why don't you take us, Dave, to the beginning? I know there was a couple of other individuals, Luke Sampson and Keith Barnhart, that were involved in this, and then you came on board. So bring us, you know, up to date, starting back at the very beginning.
Sure. So, yeah, that's correct. I had two partners originally, Keith and Luke, and the three of us all got to know each other working together in a different industry. We worked in the mortgage industry for a company called Novastar Mortgage, and I had started at that company back in 1997. I started out there as a sales rep, worked there for 10 years, went through a variety of different positions at that company, ultimately ended up as the president and CEO in 2005. And I met Luke when I hired him as a sales rep in 1999. And so that's how we got to know each other. And then Luke actually ended up hiring Keith into the company in the mortgage business in 2003. And so that's where we all got connected, and we continued to work together in that company for the next few years. But in 2007, you guys may recall that the mortgage industry hit a little rough patch, and our company, Novastar, was a non-conforming lender, and so our end of the industry basically went away. So we ended up closing that company down in August of 2007. So Keith and Luke both live in Wilmington, North Carolina area. They had gotten to know each other pretty well, you know, being neighbors as well as working together for, you know, for the mortgage company. And so when that ended, they started looking into different opportunities. They actually looked at buying a couple of different franchises potentially, but ultimately started gravitating their interest towards the healthcare industry, specifically companies that would provide products or services to aging baby boomers, just having read a lot about how that generation is really expanding over the next couple of decades and that there'll be a lot of opportunity there. Keith actually had a family friend who owned and operated a small medical supply business in North Carolina. Most of his business was what we call durable medical equipment, so things like hospital beds and walkers and canes and some oxygen and things of that nature. Primarily, he was his revenue model was based on reimbursement through the Medicare program. But he was willing to let them come out and learn a little bit about his business. And so they did that and spent a day with him. And so they learned about the DME stuff. But while they were there, they also found out that he was doing some business with a local VA hospital installing mobility equipment for veterans. And so they had seen enough that they felt like there was an interesting business opportunity there. And so they came back and started up a company. They originally called it something else. It was originally called Lifestyle Mobility and Medical Supply. And it was just the two of them initially for about the first 6 months. Luke and I were pretty good friends. We'd, you know, known each other for a number of years at that point. And so every week or so, he would call me up and check in on me and tell me what they were up to. And after about 6 months of their operating, you know, they felt like they were onto something, that they had a business that could really be scalable and expandable. And then they asked me to come join them as a partner to help figure out how to grow and scale the business. And so in 2008, I joined them on the corporate side, and we continued to grow the business using a corporate model for roughly the next year or so. And then in 2009, we started looking into franchising as a way to really scale the business for the long term. So we hired iFranchise Group, Mark Siebert and his company, in 2009 to help us put together, you know, all the pieces to begin offering franchises. And we started offering them in 2010. We opened our first franchise in Reading, Pennsylvania in August of that year. And then I guess we're now up to about 50 franchise owners, I think. We have about 60 locations now open, close to that. And Keith and Luke, interestingly, both have left the corporate side of the business and have actually since come back and bought franchises. So now they're both franchise owners in our system.
What a great story. And I love the fact that, you know, you rose – out of those rough times and out of, you know, out of lemons comes lemonade. And I always look for that. I too am somewhat a victim of 07, 08 with a concept that I birthed during those times. And, you know, everything prepares you for what comes next. I guess in real time, sometimes we don't know why we go through the things we have to. But really, it's just preparing us for what's coming next. So let's talk a little, Dave, about the consumer experience. And, you know, years ago, probably 15 or so years ago, I had the need for the kinds of services that you provide with my dad, who needed mobility and ramping, and it was so hard to find. I couldn't, you know, to me it seemed like a very fragmented business. You could find people that could do it, but you didn't really know if they could do what you needed and would it get done right. How do consumers go about finding you today, and how do you make them know you're there?
Yeah, so that's a great point. The industry was then, and still, with the exception of 101 Mobility, remains pretty fragmented. There are several thousand companies that do what we do in the U.S. in the space, and for the most part, they're really a collection of small mom-and-pop operators. There's not really another brand that we can speak of that has, you know, a large number of locations nationwide, and that type of thing. So that was part of what we saw as the opportunity, was that the industry was very fragmented. It's not a new industry. The companies that we deal with that make these products have been manufacturing them in excess of 30 years. And so it's an industry that's been around for a while, and it just has over the years developed into a very fragmented model. And so we felt like, gee, you know, here's a industry that's growing. The biggest demographic that we serve are aging baby boomers. And everybody knows that story. And so, you know, the industry is growing. There's a lot of opportunity. It's completely fragmented. There is no dominant player. And we thought, well, gee, maybe we could, you know, build a brand and build a model that would, you know, really expand into the marketplace and become the leader in the industry. And we've largely been able to do that in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. A lot of our customers find us online. And so that's been kind of one of the bigger parts of our strategy, I guess, is investing pretty heavily into our website properties. We have about 125 different, you know, websites. Most of those are mini sites, which are location-driven sites. And then we have our main website, 101mobility.com. And then we do some pay-per-click advertising and things of that nature. So that's actually the largest generator of revenue in our model, is the internet presence that we have and the leads that we're able to drive in from the internet every day.
So it's just a follow-up question is, as government has, as we all know and talk about just about weekly on this program, found their way into our lives like running water can find its way through cracks in walls, what does the government have to say about your business, and is there a lot of government intervention with federal regulation above and beyond what we live with in franchising? Do they interfere with your life on the consumer side of your business as well?
Not really. They more or less stay out of it at the distributor level. The main products that we offer, being stair lifts and ramps and patient lifts, are not covered typically by Medicare or by your health insurance program. So we find alternative funding sources. There's lots of those out there, but most of our clients are private pay. And so there's not, other than the VA as the largest purchaser of this type of equipment nationally, and they're our biggest customer as a single customer, outside of the VA, the government is really not participating in funding this type of equipment for the most part, at least not at the national level. There are some, you know, state Medicaid waiver programs and so forth that we participate in, but that's sort of a different world than the Medicare side of things. And so they don't really participate at that level. There is some regulation by the FDA in the manufacturer of certain products that we sell. Stair lifts, as an example, are considered a type of medical device. And so while you don't need a prescription and so forth to purchase one, the manufacturer of those products are regulated by the FDA. But it's kind of a light touch. I mean, they don't look at it as they would, I forget the classification. I think they call it like a class 2 device or something. So it's not, you know, a medical device that somebody puts into their body or anything along those lines, but they do have some oversight. But that's relatively a non-issue for us as a distributor. That's really more of a manufacturer issue. So, and then I would say the third regulatory element is that in a number of states where we operate, some of the equipment that we install, namely platform lifts and in some cases stair lifts, fall under regulations that would apply to the elevator industry. And so there are some states where you need an elevator mechanics license to install certain equipment, even in residential situations. But most states actually require some type of contractor or elevator licensing on commercial applications. And more of our franchises are participating on the commercial side. So we do get into some of those sort of local code enforcement type regulations when it comes to the installation side of things. But as I mentioned, the FDA is not really a part of the picture for us. And, you know, we don't really deal with Medicare in our business either.
So with, as I read in some of the press information, $4 million in sales revenue in the first year of operation. You know, obviously that just doesn't happen by accident. There has to be some strong processes and procedures in place, but more importantly, there's got to be a strong customer experience. What separates 101 Mobility from all those several thousand mom and pops that have these type of places throughout the country?
Yeah, we've given that a lot of thought. You know, we came from outside the industry. We got into the space not really knowing much about it and kind of figured a lot out as we kind of operated in the space. And I think what ultimately happens is that consumers get frustrated with the inconsistency of the service levels that they get from, you know, mom and pop operators. And in many cases, the smaller operators have not really given a lot of thought to or structure around how the customer experiences their service, where we really focused on that from the very beginning. We scripted it out. We created a set of core values very early on in our history. And, you know, in many companies, having, you know, core values is nice to have, and you put them up on the wall and you talk about them periodically. But at 101 Mobility, we really live and die by our core values. We put a lot of thought into them, and we use them as strategic decision-making filters all the time. And as I look at our core values, they're very customer-centric. You know, they're really focused on the customer's experience, making sure that they have a good experience, always giving them the benefit of the doubt when there's some sort of situation that comes up, and also having a customer experience that is prescribed or scripted and not just random. And so I think that's probably the biggest differentiator is, and it really always starts with the simple things, right, particularly answering the phone. And so that's one of the things that we've always talked about. We measure it. We track and record all the calls that we get. And so we spend a lot of time really focusing on that very first interaction that our customer has with us as a brand when they, most of the time, they pick up the phone and call. So most of the inquiries we get are live phone calls as opposed to, you know, internet contacts or email or anything like that. It's mostly people that call. And so as consumers, I'm sure you guys have experienced this, but how frustrating is it when you have determined that you have a need and you call a company and they just don't pick up the phone, or you can't get a hold of them, or they put you into some sort of frustrating, you know, phone tree. And so we really thought about that customer's journey through this process all the way through, step by step, starting with, you know, they see us online, they learn a little bit about the company, and they make the decision, which is a pretty big decision, to say, this is a company at least I want to start with. You know, this is a company I want to try. And so, as you can imagine, if the first thing that they do when they try is pick up the phone and call and then we don't answer, or they get a voicemail or some other somewhat negative experience, that puts us off on a really, really bad start. So we really focus on, you know, that as the starting point. And then the rest of it is all really iterative from there. You know, as we think of very often about, you know, if I were going through this process as a consumer, what would I want? What does your customer want from you? And it really, we design the processes all around that. And so that's been a central focus of our strategy from the very beginning. You know, we there's really three positions you can take when you put a company together from a strategic standpoint. You can be a product leader, you know, develop your own products that are unique to, you know, the marketplace. You can be a price leader, you know, basically people buy from you because you're the cheapest, or you can be a service leader. And we very clearly and definitively chose the service leadership position as our, you know, as our strategic approach to the market. And so we've focused heavily on that, you know, as we build our business.
Yeah, having gone through some of this with aging parents the last few years, it is a quite a daunting task for somebody, you know, that's never been involved in it. And I imagine that answering on the first call, because I was thinking back as you were speaking, I don't think anybody answered our phone calls. And quite frankly, we didn't even know what we were looking for. We didn't know what was available, what options there were. So it really was a daunting task. So I imagine your customers are very, very pleased. And obviously that's going to contribute to word of mouth referrals and continued growth. I even remember, you know, growing up, you know, in Brooklyn, New York, a lot of the places that sold some of the equipment that you're talking about were like on the back end of what they called drugstores and pharmacies back then. And it was this building that wasn't front of center. It almost looked like a warehouse. I remember back then, you know, walking with my grandparents through there for whatever reason, and it just seemed like it just so dark and dingy. And I imagine going through the experience is already, you know, you're already on a negative, you know, footing, so to speak, that that just adds to it. I think what you're doing from what you explained is just tremendous. And certainly looking at, you know, everything that you've done in the digital space is really stages ahead of a lot of other companies across any industry segment. I mean, the internet is here today. It's where people, you know, find information. It's interesting, as I was going back and forth with our great friends at Fishman Public Relations and learning more about your company. And of course, all of a sudden, you know, I'm getting ads down the side of my pages. And so it was pretty interesting to see the different advertising, pay-per-click advertising that's out there.
Yeah, and it's, you know, a lot of people, the immediate thing that they think about is, well, you know, if your target demographic or your customer ultimately are, you know, elderly, is that still work? You know, are they online? Are they looking for information in that venue? And there's two things that we've learned about that. One of them is that in many cases, it's not the end user that's actually doing the research. It's often an adult child or a caretaker of some kind or an advocate that's, you know, doing initial research into the product lines. But even when it is our end user or you know, their spouse, which may be the same age, what the research shows is that that age group is as online as any other age group, and even their adoption to mobile devices has been in lockstep with the rest of the population. So when we look at, you know, who are searching for stair lifts and wheelchair ramps and things of that nature, and then we look and say, well, how much of that search is being done on mobile devices as opposed to desktop, it's actually a point or two higher than the average for all search. And so that's pretty interesting. But I know, you know, my parents are in their 70s, and my mom's on her smartphone all day long doing stuff. So, you know, that generation has definitely picked up on the technology, and they're making it useful for themselves.
Well, when we come back from the break, Dave, we're going to dive into the other side of the consumers that may be looking for you, and we're going to talk a little bit about how franchisees interact and engage with you, what it is you look for in them, and what they should be looking for in you, and we'll take a deeper dive into that side of the business and the consumer for your franchise. This is Franchise Today. I'm Stan Friedman, along with Paul Segretto. And we're speaking today with Dave Paskin, CEO and co-founder of 101 Mobility. Franchise Today is brought to you by FRM Solutions, offering best-in-class CRM and document management software specifically for franchise business relationships. Built in industry-leading Microsoft Dynamics CRM, FRM Solutions are both cloud-based as well as fully accessible right from inside your Outlook inbox. With FRM, you'll spend more time focused on growing your business while their systems and solutions take care of effectively managing workflows and collaborative communication with prospective and existing franchisees. You can sort, report, and dashboard all of your vital data and empower your team to accelerate franchise sales, streamline store openings, and better manage day-to-day operations, unit-level performance, and compliance. No hassles, no long-term contracts, no excuses, just solutions. FRM Solutions on the web at frmsolutions.com. Franchise Today is also brought to you by the Franchise Foundry, a business accelerator boasting more than 30 years of experience helping emerging brands bring sustainable growth to their franchise concepts. The Franchise Foundry utilizes a hybrid coaching and consulting approach which fosters effective solutions for their clients in many aspects of their business. These would include general operational and change management, traditional and digital marketing, relationship and business management, and of course, franchise recruitment and development. The Franchise Foundry also assists brands with raising capital and with the exploration of potential for mergers and acquisitions. You can learn more about their expanding list of clients across various industry segments at franchisefoundry.com. That's www.franchisefoundry.com for the Franchise Foundry. So let's go back to the conversation with Dave and talk about how one-on-one mobility looks at the franchise side of the business, as we've gotten a pretty good view of Dave the individual on the consumer side of one-on-one mobility. Dave, let's talk a little bit about the franchise side and how you've gotten to 54 so quickly, and what kinds of processes have you put in place to effectively manage that aspect of your business?
Sure. I feel like, you know, we really got lucky, quite honestly, with some of our earliest franchises. I think, you know, we launched a concept in an industry where franchising was not part of the picture. So there wasn't a model out there for us to really look at. And so we had to kind of take some educated guesses around how we designed our program. But as we started to go to market and we started to entertain some candidates, you know, we had a very clear mental picture that we needed to have some very strong initial franchises. Otherwise, we're dead in the water. You know, you can't have your first three or four franchise owners not make it. Otherwise, you'll just never get out of the gates. And so the very first franchise that we brought in, Michelle Ragland up in Reading, Pennsylvania, was, you know, a really important candidate for us because he's, you know, a smart guy, independently minded, and he and the first probably five or six franchises really helped us figure a lot of things out. And so I think we did. It was a combination of luck and also, you know, that sort of dedicated approach to making sure we had really strong franchise owners in the beginning. And since then, you know, we've been pretty careful about the owners that we bring in, and I think the upside is that our industry does hold a lot of opportunity. The market tends to be, you know, continues to be very fragmented, and so our competition is not very organized for the most part. And so I think we're in a good market, and I think that, you know, a lot of people recognize that. When we talk to some of the existing owners about, you know, why they're part of our program, the things that we hear about, for example, are that, you know, the market is expanding, so everybody kind of recognizes that opportunity. They believe that the business is very scalable. We have franchise owners that have built multi-million dollar businesses in the past, you know, two or three years with relatively modest investment. And so they've learned that, you know, the business is really scalable, even, you know, unlike maybe some retail-based business models where, you know, every next $300,000 or $400,000 worth of revenue requires a capital investment in a new store. You know, an additional $300,000 or $400,000 worth of revenue in our business may be just exploiting another, you know, channel opportunity. So the scalability is important. Another factor is that it's a relatively simple business to run. You know, the equipment is not super complex, but, you know, from a human resources footprint, a franchise running a $1 million business typically has, including the owner as a participant, between three and five, you know, people working the business. So there's not that many moving parts, and so it's a pretty simple business to operate from that perspective. And, you know, as we mentioned, our internet presence actually is a really nice way to kind of prime the pump. We're typically able to drive a lot of interest and make the phone ring at a new franchise's location almost immediately, just leveraging off of, you know, the historical performance that we've had on our internet presence. And so that's a big part of it. And then the last thing, and I think probably most of the franchisees in our system, if not all of them, were attracted to our program because, as one of them puts it, it's meaningful work. You know, what we do every day is we help people. We get a lot of, you know, very sentimental testimonials. You know, a lot of times the equipment that we install changes people's lives. And so I think strong business-minded people who are interested in owning their own company and running their own business are attracted to our program for, in many cases, all of those reasons as they start to get to know about the industry and what we do and how we operate. And then I would say, you know, we have done a pretty good job of supporting our franchises, making sure that they have the tools that they need to be successful. We have a very strong advisory council. There are six franchise owners that participate in an advisory council that meets by phone every couple of weeks, and then we also meet in person two or three times a year. And, you know, we work with them hand in hand as we make larger scale strategic decisions about the direction of the company. And so I think, you know, we have a lot of communication with our franchise owners as well. And, you know, we've been lucky and good at the same time, I think.
Well, it's no wonder that I see at the bottom of your webpage the top 50 2016 Franchisee Satisfaction Award from FBR. We talked a little bit about them on at the front of the show. I also see the top 100 franchise Gator logo on your site. So that tells me a little bit about one place, at least, where you find prospective franchisees. But let's talk a little bit more about what you just touched on with purpose-driven people and business skills and acumen. What does a day in the life of one of your franchisees look like, and how do you express to a candidate who may think that they want to be a franchisee what their life looks like and where their time should not be spent? Because sometimes perception of what a business is and the reality of the business are skewed a little bit differently from the points of view of those looking. So how do you get those right people understanding what a day in the life would be, and then where do you find them?
Sure. So we've given a lot of thought to the critical skill set required to operate a 101 mobility business. And what it really comes down to, in my view, is organizational development skills. We just held our annual conference a couple of weekends ago here in Wilmington, and a lot of the topics and breakout sessions and general themes of the conference were really around developing those organizational development skills so that as an owner of a business, a franchise owner can ultimately figure out how to put the right people into the right places in their organization. You know, that old adage about getting the right people in the right seats on the bus, making sure the bus has the correct seats in the first place, you know, not settling for less than exceptional levels of performance. And that's especially critical when you're in a business model where, you know, there may be anywhere from 3, 4, 5, 6 employees altogether. You can't have anyone really dragging the bottom, otherwise it weakens the entire company and puts you at risk. And so we focus a lot on not only identifying candidates who have organizational development skills in their background, but also working with our existing franchises to help them develop those skills around, you know, people management, hiring the right people, coaching them to perform, understanding when it's time to, you know, cut somebody loose and how to go about doing that. Building the right culture at your company, making sure that it's the type of a company where good people want to work. And that's something that a lot of people don't really think about. But, you know, if you want to have a high-performance team, you have to be able to attract high-performance people and also keep them. And in order to keep them, it has to be the type of company where good people want to work. And not every small business offers that sort of environment. And then the third leg of that organizational development stool is your processes, making sure you understand which processes are critical to the success of your business. How do you measure your success in those processes in a regular way and almost literally obsess about those numbers as you manage your business? And so, you know, we look for that people development, that organizational development skill set. We coach around that and we support that heavily in the support activities that we offer as franchise owners. And then, you know, we find our candidates through a variety of different channels. The most prolific channel that we've had to date has been through the franchise broker community. And I think that makes a lot of sense to me because we're typically looking for a candidate who's going to go beyond the owner-operator model. You know, we're really expecting our franchise owners to build ultimately million-dollar plus, in some cases, multi-million-dollar businesses. And that goes beyond the owner-operator, you know, business model where it might be you and one other person in the business and that's the whole business. This is really something that requires some scale. And so franchise brokers tend to be dealing with candidates that have a lot of business experience. You know, they may have worked at big companies or been entrepreneurs in the past, and they reach out or find, you know, qualified brokers that are able to help them navigate as you guys know, the literally thousands of potential businesses that they may look at and find a handful that might be the right fit for them. And so that's been, you know, probably one of the best sources that we've had. And then we also, I would say the next probably most common source of successful candidates has been our own websites and franchise development, franchise websites. So we do get a lot of those organic inquiries through, you know, our own web properties. And then, of course, we do participate with the portals, as you mentioned, Franchise Gator and a number of others. We've, you know, historically done some advertising in, like, Inc. Magazine and things of that nature. But between our website and brokers has really been, you know, brought in the bulk of our successful franchise candidates over the past 5 or 6 years.
So there's some interesting facts around the industry. Spending power of the wealthiest retired population in the history of this country is one of the factors that's driven 101 Mobility to a 93% increase in revenue between 2013 and 2015. The franchise also benefits from the large segment of the population affected by short-term or lifelong illnesses and disabilities. The growing market of the disabled accounts for $175 billion in discretionary spending each year. And of course, with those type of facts that are out there and the growth that you're achieving, it was no wonder that a private equity player would come knocking on the door. And I believe, if I'm correct, 101 Mobility was bought out by a private equity player in 2014. Tell us how, especially since we have so many franchisors that listen to Franchise Today and really would, you know, love to look at an opportunity of being courted, so to speak, by a private equity firm. Tell us, you know, what led to it, what your thoughts were, you and your partners at that time, because, you know, you're giving up some control at that point, if not all the control. Just take us down that path, because it's a very intriguing path, and this will be the second week in a row, Stan, where we're going down this path, because obviously Dogtopia last week went through something similar with the Thomas Franchise Group.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we when Luke and Keith and I started the company, it was a classic bootstrap company from a capital investment standpoint. There was not a lot of capital put into the business initially. The corporate operations that we ran in the early days provided the cash flow to allow us to expand into franchising, make that investment, and that type of thing. And we felt strongly that we needed to make sure that we had the right infrastructure in place, and we had tended to be more build versus buy in terms of our approach to support infrastructure. So, for example, we've built our own business management system that's proprietary to our business. We generally have built all of our own websites and web properties. We did all of that in-house, managed pay-per-click accounts. All of the support functions and that type of thing have been, you know, done in-house. And so whether that was the right thing to do or not, those types of investments are expensive and take time. And so as we were growing our business, what we started to see, particularly back in the 2012 timeframe, was that, you know, our model was growing, our franchisees were successful, we were getting a lot of inquiries, and we were adding a lot of new franchises. And what we didn't really have were the resources to put the infrastructure that we felt was needed in place to really mature our system. And so when we started looking at capital partners, it wasn't a cash out type of a scenario. It wasn't that we had built a, you know, big successful business and we're now looking to, you know, personally cash out of that investment. It was really more of a cash in than a cash out scenario. So we felt like we needed capital or access to capital in order to continue the growth curve that we were on. And what we were afraid of was, you know, we had built a model, we had started a program in an industry that really didn't have one in the past. We knew that would be obvious to people with capital and expertise. And we felt like, you know, we didn't want to just slow things down and be conservative and, you know, conserve cash in the short term and, you know, tap the brakes and let somebody else kind of pass us by. And so we felt like we really needed access to capital to continue the growth. So I went out and met with a number of different potential capital partners Mostly they were private equity, some angel investors, and some others. And probably about halfway through that process, we had a meeting with one of our suppliers, which is a company called Harmar. And Harmar had been recently acquired by the Cortec Group the year before, or actually, well, I guess earlier that year in 2012. And so, you know, they just kind of casually mentioned that they had this new relationship and, you know, would we be interested in speaking with them? Do we have a need for capital? And I said, well, actually we do. And so we met with them in late 2012, and they seemed to have a really strong interest, primarily just given their investment in the Harmar business. And they felt like the 101 mobility, you know, model would be a good add-on to that business, given that Harmar makes products that we sell. And so we ultimately ended up putting a deal together that closed in May of 2013. And, you know, we have had a really positive experience throughout that relationship. They've been a great partner. They've done all the things that they said they would do. They've added some strategic value in terms of, you know, their expertise and having investments in a lot of different industries and businesses of different sizes and shapes. And so that continues to be a good relationship for us. But the you know, the real critical piece was that they gave us good advice, but also provided us with capital that we needed to make sure that we were, you know, investing in our infrastructure appropriately to build the brand that we really had envisioned.
Well, that to me seems to be the really sweet spot in franchising for private equity money, is not just the money, but really it's more about capital. And some of that capital is fiscal, and a lot of it is intellectual. And it seems like you've got very, very, very fortunate to find that sweet spot in your private equity relationship. So in the time we've got left, Dave, looking ahead, I mean, 54 franchisees operating 145 territories today. Where do you see this year ending for you? And then looking out, you know, five years seems like a long time in today's world, but if you were taking the genie and uncorking the bottle with a perfect five-year plan, what would that look like for your brand for 101 Mobility 5 years out?
Yeah, so we actually just completed work on a three-year plan, and I guess I can just sort of add a little bit to that. But as we look at the trajectory that we had, we kind of started plotting it out all the way back from 2012 and just kind of looked at our growth trajectory, number of owners, and overall system revenue, and plotted that out over the next 3 years. And so that sees us getting to right around 100 franchise owners, you know, within that time frame, roughly by the end of 2019 or early 2020. And so that's kind of the short-term plan, is to really basically double the franchise owner footprint. And that's throughout North America. So we've started offering franchises in Canada. We're entertaining some candidates there currently. And we anticipate that we'll have, you know, some number over the next few years of franchise owners setting up shop in the Canadian market. And we may also look at international expansion, you know, outside of North America as time goes on, as we kind of seek out, you know, additional expansion opportunities. 5 years from now, I would expect that we'll be in the, you know, range of around 120 to 130 franchise owners, something along those lines. And that may be, you know, some growth outside of North America specifically.
Tell us a little bit about the initial investment and franchise fee for those that might be interested.
Yeah, it's a pretty reasonable investment level. I think the low end of the range starts around in the low hundreds, like maybe 110, 115,000. And obviously, as you purchase additional territory or, you know, start out with a bigger business, it can go up from there. Typically, I would say people are purchasing two territories to start. Two to three is pretty common. And so, you know, usually their startup costs are more around a quarter million, something like that. So that's probably a typical range of investment for a new franchise. And, you know, the nice thing is that it doesn't require a lot of build out. So once we identify space and so forth, we can be up and running pretty quickly. You know, 90 to 120 days from the time an agreement is signed is not uncommon for us to have the, you know, the franchise business up and operating. And the kind of cool thing about it is we look at the performance that we've had in our system to date. We've got a lot of folks that have, you know, invested in that range, you know, call it $250,000. And in the course of 2 or 3 years have built businesses that have $2 or $3 million worth of revenue. And so, you know, that's a pretty high revenue to investment ratio. So you combine that with the fact that we're in an industry where the work we do is meaningful to people. It really helps people every day. You know, the industry is expanding. The opportunities are, you know, growing every single day. And then you get to that scalability where on a relatively modest investment, you can build a multi-million-dollar business, or at least that's what we've seen some of our franchise owners be able to do. It really lines up to be a strong, you know, business opportunity for a lot of people.
So, Dave, how would interested individuals in the franchise opportunity contact you and find out more information?
Yeah, well, they can come to our main website, 101mobility.com, and learn a little bit about the company there. We also have a franchise website, 101mobilityfranchise.com, and they can learn a lot more about it there. And there's plenty of opportunities within both of those sites to, you know, reach out and set up a time to speak with, you know, some of our development representatives, as well as myself. I'm pretty involved in the development process. And so I really like to get to know our candidates early in the process and really start to help them and us understand if there's a good match there. So, but I'd encourage people to, you know, reach out to us through the website and we'll pick it up from there.
That sounds great. Dave, thanks for being our guest today on Franchise Today, and continued success. Best wishes and luck for continued success. I'm sure you're definitely on the right path to being a very sustainable brand. It's something Stan and I are very passionate about. Thank you again for being our guest.
That's great. Well, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks. Well, thank you, too, to our friends at Fishman Public Relations. Do a great job, as well as some of the other PR firms out there providing us with just some very intriguing guests, Dan. I mean, people that, for the most part, are somewhat under our radar.
You know, it's true. I mean, every day that we reconvene here weekly, Paul, I'm just standing and marvel and awe at how many brands I've yet to meet, how many people like Dave I've yet to be introduced to. And the good news for me as I reflect on this is franchising, paying it forward with the conversations we have and the people that we try to help through our businesses and through our association with IFA, gratifying as can be to know there are guys like this out there that are going to take the next generation of legacy in the business model of franchising, despite all the things that are trying to distract us. Franchising's got a universe of pretty talented people out there ready to take it to the next level. And it's no surprise to me that the last thing we heard from Dave was how involved he is in the development of the relationships with his prospective franchisees, despite the investment in all the systems and processes and broker commissions that he pays. He's got his finger on that pulse and was very, very smart to understand that the one place that he can have the greatest influence in what happens in 101 Mobility's future is in the selection process and bringing the right people in for the right reasons at the right times. That's big stuff right there. And more franchisors, if they take anything out of this program this week, take that. Because the success of a sustainable brand like 101 Mobility has a CEO who gets that. And of all the things he does every day, he's very smart to keep his eye on that ball.
Absolutely. What really impressed me on top of that was the fact that the two other co-founders, Luke Sampson and Keith Barnhart, instead of just going off into the sunset, turn around and bought franchises of their own within 101 Mobility. Talk about putting your money where your mouth is, right?
No kidding. Absolutely true, Paul.
Yeah, that's great. Well, next week, we've got some interesting guests. Mark Crossett, the founder and original franchise operator of Been There, Dump That, and Been being B-I-N, Been There, Dump That, and Michael Kernighan, the CEO of Been There, Dump That. Boy, that's a tongue twister. Been There, Dump That. They will both be on next week at the same bat time, same bat station. Stan, another good show. Thank you, as always.
Always a pleasure, Paul. Getting ready to tee it up and have a lunch meeting with two friends of mine from the franchising world, one of whom I've known for almost 20 years. Haven't seen him since We were together at the Blimpy World way back when, and he and his partners are making a big mark on the fitness world and the spa world with Marilyn Monroe Spas and Tap Out Fitness. So good to see Drew Paris and my good friend Mike Ciccarelli, and we ought to be talking to these guys in the weeks ahead, along with Gary Occhio-Grosso, who we both owe a payback to. We've got to get Gary on, get him scheduled and committed, and as much as he took out of us in his interviews, we've got to go get some back from him.
Well, I'll tell you, we do, and we have guests lining up left and right, and two in particular that are dear friends to both of us that gave me a commitment just recently was Mark Liston and Mary Kay Liston. And, of course, they're both presidents of brands at the Dwyer Group. And they're going to come on to talk about what it's like to be a married couple, both presidents within the same organization. So that should be very, very interesting. And we'll be locking down that date here pretty quick. Till next
if
week, Dan.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one, Paul. I am still looking forward to that one.
That's going to be a great one. You know, we did that a few years ago with Sherry and Brad Fishman, both, you know, obviously married and working within the same organization. And this has got a little bit of a different spin to it, but a lot of similarities. Anyway, until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best in this great, great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.